10. Toussaint seizes the power. Toussaint, in his 12 years of politics, national and international, made only one serious mistake, the one which ended his career. Strategic necessities he always saw early, and never hesitated in carrying out whatever policies they demanded. Now that he had dismissed Hédouville, the official representative of the French government, and his acknowledged superior, he saw that he had now to crush the mulatto state of Rigo. The great danger now was a French expedition, and it was suicidal to allow Rigo and his mulattoes to remain in control of the south and west. They would most certainly welcome a French force and ensure the ruin of the black state. It is easy to misjudge Rigo. For him, France was the mother country still, who had made free men of mulattoes and blacks. I grieve to see this, the most cruel blow that has ever been struck against those of us in San Domingo whom the revolution has made to live again. The Directory will see its authority nullified in this colony. The whole of France will believe that we wish to make ourselves independent, as a crowd of fools already say and believe. Rigo sent in his resignation to Toussaint. If it were accepted, then inevitably Beauvais would succeed him, and Beauvais, Toussaint, and Roume would be able, perhaps, to make unity a reality. Rigo pleaded. He, Roume, will no doubt consult you as to the choice of my successor. I once more assure you, Citizen General, of my fidelity to France and my respect and untarnished regard for your person. The waste of all this bravery, devotion, and noble feeling on the corrupt and rapacious bourgeois who were still, in the eyes of the misguided Rigo, the banner-bearers of liberty and equality. Roume refused to accept Rigo's resignation, and thenceforth, civil war was inevitable. With the packet that contained Roome's appointment were two other packets. What did they contain? We do not know. But it may well have been instructions to keep the two parties apart at all costs. Roume did not want war, but he acted as if his business was to prevent a close understanding. Rigo's effort to resign, he intended to retire to France, and the tone of his letters to Toussaint show how uncertain he was. But the French government did its diabolical work with skill. Hédouville suggested that the Directory should even place the blame for the breach on him publicly, so as not to alarm Toussaint. The Directory expressed its regret to Toussaint at seeing Hédouville return, but professed to retain confidence in Toussaint. Yet Bouix, the colonial minister, wrote cordially to Rigo. Talleyrand, Minister for Foreign Affairs, wrote encouragingly both to Toussaint and to Rigo. Thus France kept the pot boiling merrily. Maitland left San Domingo in October or November 1798, and on December 12th, the following appeared in the London Gazette. No event has happened in the history of the present war of more interest to the cause of humanity or to the permanent interests of Great Britain than the treaty which General Maitland has made with the black General Toussaint upon the evacuation of San Domingo. By this treaty, the independence of that most valuable island is in fact recognized and will be secured against all the efforts which the French can now make to recover it. Not merely without the expense to England of fortifications or of armies, but with the benefit of securing to us its exclusive commerce. Toussaint Louverture is a Negro, and in the jargon of war has been called a brigand. But according to all accounts, he is a Negro born to vindicate the claims of this species and to show that the character of men is independent of exterior color. The late events in San Domingo will soon engage the public attention. They are such as are calculated to please all parties. It is a great point to rescue this formidable island from the grasp of the Directory, from whence, if they had regained their footing, they might have incessantly menaced and perhaps assailed the most favorite of our West Indian possessions. And on the other hand, it is a great point gained to the cause of humanity that a Negro domination is in fact constituted and organized in the West Indies under the command of a Negro chief or king, that the black race, whom the Christian world to their infamy have been accustomed to degrade, every liberal Briton will feel proud that this country brought about the happy revolution. The British, after having been driven out of the island in September, were posing in December as the authors of the happy revolution and rejoicing at the freedom of a people to enslave whom they had just lost 100,000 men. In addition to soothing the national vanity, this lying notice would also, of course, be read by the Directory. Having thus driven another wedge between Toussaint and the French, Maitland then set out for America to negotiate the division of the trade with that country. Harcourt was sent on in advance to San Domingo, but Toussaint did not want to negotiate with the British at all. He challenged Harcourt about the notice which had appeared in the press. Harcourt returned an evasive answer and had the unbelievable stupidity to tell Toussaint that the British were making these arrangements with him not so much for any military or commercial advantage, but to witness to him their satisfaction at his good faith and punctuality in the execution of his engagements. When Maitland got to America, he found that Toussaint had been making his own arrangements with the American government. The president had already authorized a trade agreement and appointed a trade representative to San Domingo. From no classes of people have Negroes suffered more than from the capitalists of Britain and America. They have been the most pertinacious preachers of race prejudice in the world. Yet the Americans vied with the British in compliments to Black Toussaint and San Domingo trade. John Hollingsworth of John Hollingsworth and Company wrote to Toussaint that in you I place the most implicit confidence and have, moreover, the pleasure to add that, as far as my information goes, I find the same to be prevalent, which to me is no small consolation, as I have advocated the proposed negotiation with my utmost endeavor. When the British agents learned how far Toussaint had gone with the Americans, they forgot their protestations of negotiating only to please Toussaint, turned nasty, and threatened that if their ships were not allowed in the harbors on the same terms as the Americans, British cruisers would blockade the island. That was Toussaint's dilemma. France was at war with Britain. Like all the French blacks, he detested the British. But the San Domingo economy was on the verge of collapse. And though he tried to evade a trade agreement with the enemies of France, he had, in the end, to admit British ships flying the American or Spanish flag into the San Domingo harbors. Roome suggested that he should arrest Maitland, as would have been very easy. Toussaint refused. Instead, he read Roome's letter to Maitland and read him also his own reply to Roome, indignantly repelling the base suggestion. Maitland was much impressed. This whole convention was in every way irregular. Maitland knew that Toussaint had no authority. Toussaint knew that he had none. At the peace, all these problems would be resolved. In any case, to treat thus with Britain, actually at war with France, was a dangerous thing to do, but it was an act of wise and courageous statesmanship. Even Roome, the agent of the French government, whom it placed in a very difficult position, had to admit that Toussaint was justified. The Directory itself approved of the arrangement with the United States in the Moniteur of 26 Vendémiaire and 8, October 19, 1799. Toussaint attempted no secrecy. He openly admitted there were several clauses in the convention, mutual promises not to attack each other, but that these secret clauses were necessary for the salvation of San Domingo and were no treason to France. Even Rigaud joined the chorus of praise. Although my enemies, always active to harm me, have managed to diminish your friendship for me, I am not the less an admirer of your talent and of your merit. I offer my tribute of praise, which you deserve. But the trade with America could not have been arranged without the consent of the British. Rigaud, however, said nothing about this. Toussaint, on the other hand, excluded the ports of the South from the agreement. And even before he actually signed with Maitland on June 13, 1799, he once more took the offensive against Rigaud. In a public proclamation, Rigaud defended himself with moving passion against the charge that he did not wish to obey Toussaint because Toussaint was a Negro. Indeed, if I had reached the stage where I would not wish to obey a black, if I had the stupid presumption to believe that I am above such obedience, on what grounds could I claim obedience from the whites? What a grievous example would I be giving to those placed under my orders? Besides, is there so great a difference between the color of the commander-in-chief and mine? Is it a tint of color, more or less dark, which instills principles of philosophy or gives merit to an individual? And if one man is a little lighter in color than another, does it follow that one must obey him in everything? I, not willing to obey a black? Why, all my life from my cradle I have been obedient to blacks. Isn't my birth the same as that of General Toussaint? Isn't my mother, who brought me into the world, a Negro? Have I not a black elder brother for whom I have always had a profound respect and whom I have always obeyed? Who has given me the first principles of education? Is it not a black who was schoolmaster in the town of L'Écaille? Isn't it clear that I have been accustomed to obedience to blacks all my life? And everyone knows that first principles remain eternally graven in our hearts. I have consecrated my life to the defense of the blacks. From the beginning of the revolution, I have braved all for the cause of liberty. I have not betrayed my principles, and I shall never do so. Besides, I am too much a believer in the rights of man to think that there is one color in nature superior to another. I know a man only as a man. These words could not have been written before July 14, 1789. A true son of the revolution, Rigaud was hurt in his soul that people might think his quarrel with Toussaint was due to Toussaint's color. Toussaint was equally emphatic, and though he accused the mulatto class of conspiring against him, yet he disdained the charge of hating mulattoes by pointing to the great number of them who were fighting in his army against Rigaud. Without doubt, the susceptibilities, the jealousies born of the differences of color, manifested themselves sometimes to an unreasonable degree, but the exigencies of the service and a severe discipline had more than ever fused the three colors in the ranks of the army. The same state of things existed in the civil administration, and this was one of the happiest consequences of political equality consecrated by the principles of the revolution. The rivalries of color were not then the initial cause of the conflict which was beginning. They complicated it and became one of its elements when many officers of color in several parts of the country took Rigaud's side, and Toussaint had to treat them as traitors. This is the opinion of Monsieur Poléus Sanon, himself a Haitian, and no one has written more wisely and profoundly on the San Domingo Revolution and Toussaint Louverture. Very clearly, also, he sees the mulattoes as a typical intermediate class with all the political instability of that class. There was always also more of a political tradition among the men of color, and a peculiar disposition, often noticed, which tended to make them particularly susceptible to all the hopes or anxieties which grew out of public events. It is this mental attitude which caused the struggle between the military chiefs to assume all the tendencies of a war of color. And he concludes, Toussaint Louverture did not detest the mulattoes any more than Rigaud hated the blacks. And if each of them defended himself badly from the contrary sentiments which they attributed to each other in this respect, it was because they needed, each of them, the united force of a party in a conflict where the parties were confounded with the classes and the classes with the colors. Toussaint, for a moment, seems to have thought of winning over Beauvais to his side, and through Beauvais of binding the colony together. he published a proclamation attacking Rigo and praising Bove. Bove, through the very amiability of character which made him so beloved by everybody, played a miserable role in this crisis. Had he declared boldly for Toussaint, such was his influence and the strategic importance of his command, that Rigo could hardly have fought at all. Had he declared for Rigo, Toussaint would have been in serious danger. But so slight was the class bitterness and color feeling at the beginning of the struggle that Bove, a mulatto of the mulattoes, could not decide. Finally, he threw up his command and sailed for France. Honest to the last, and unable to take sides in this fratricidal struggle maliciously kindled by the eternal enemies of peace in San Domingo. Rigo struck first and took Petit Goave. But this fine soldier, so brilliant against the English, at once audacious, tenacious, and careful, was at his worst in this crucial campaign. Where Rigo hesitated and looked to France, Toussaint looked to France for nothing. Sending Dessalines into the south, he traveled north to crush the revolts. Free blacks of the north were revolting for Rigo, and even Pierre Michel, ancient slave, joined the revolt against Toussaint and was shot. Before the speed of Toussaint's movements and his ruthless execution of traitors, the rebels quailed. Punish even with death those who attempt the least movement. Despite Rigo's vacillation, the mulatto south fought magnificently at first. All their pride was roused, and their bitterness can be understood. There was all the old hatred between mulattoes and blacks. Toussaint had striven to moderate it, but it still remained. The Rigo brothers and the other mulatto leaders had a great record of military and administrative success from the very first days of the revolution. Rigo's achievements against the British were nearly as fine as Toussaint's. The morale of the mulatto population was high. When towns were besieged by the British, the women ran along the ramparts assisting the men with a fearlessness and disregard that showed their revolutionary temper. All the mulattoes were devoted to the Republic. Rigo had shot without mercy mulattoes who were traitors, even though mulatto women begged him on their knees to spare them. He had deported the emigre whites. To them, it seemed that Toussaint, deceived by the old whites whom they hated, and sold to the British, against whom they had shed so much blood, was at once a traitor to the Republic and a tyrant seeking to establish a black domination. They fought like tigers. The war at last rested on the fate of Jacmel, blockaded by land and sea. For 5 months, Jacmel held out under Pétion, an unusually able officer who had deserted from Toussaint. The besieged ate horses, dogs, cats, rats, old leather, the grass in the streets, until there was nothing more to eat. Rigo, strangely inactive, fought irresolutely, waiting for France. At last, Jacmel could hold out no longer. The starving garrison cut its way through Dessalines' men, and Toussaint's ultimate victory grew nearer. Bonaparte, victorious in the internal struggle of the bourgeoisie for power, was still too busy in Europe to deal with San Domingo. But Edouville assured him that Toussaint was sold to the British. Toussaint's talk to Moïse had been copied down by Moïse's white secretary and sent to France. Vincent's report, however, was wholly favorable to Toussaint. This did not change Bonaparte's plans, but Toussaint, for the time being, had to be humored. Bonaparte appointed a new commission consisting of Vincent, Raymond, and General Michel to make peace between the two combatants. Bonaparte had learned from Vincent that Toussaint was the protector of Europeans and, much more important, the most powerful man in the colony. He confirmed Toussaint in his post as commander-in-chief and governor, but carefully avoided taking any side in the quarrel. He did not write direct to Toussaint, but addressed a letter from the consuls to the citizens of San Domingo, assuring them of their liberty, but notifying them that by the new constitution he had given to the French, the colonies would no longer be represented in the French Parliament, but would be governed by special laws. He asked that on the flags of the army, an inscription should be written telling them that they owed their liberty to France. When Vincent landed in San Domingo, race feeling was high. All over the colony, blacks and mulattoes were saying that the Civil War had been kindled by the whites to weaken both sides and restore slavery. The whites had taken Toussaint's side, but they were not pleased when he drafted them into the army and made them go and fight against Rigaud. But the black laborers were heartily sick of commissioners from France. They said they did not want any white people to govern them. They would be governed by Toussaint. Moise, who did not like Vincent, arrested him, and Vincent suffered great privations and was nearly shot by his guards. Toussaint apologized to Vincent, but the arrest could hardly have taken place without his orders, though the indignities were probably due to spontaneous race feeling. Toussaint was glad to get confirmation of his post as commander-in-chief from the new regime. In the war of proclamations that he was waging with Rigaud, it was an unanswerable argument against the charge that he was a traitor to France. But the vagueness of the letter confirmed his worst suspicions. What were these special laws? Why had not Bonaparte written to him personally? He refused to inscribe the words on the banner. The first thing, however, was the war. The inhabitants of the South were tiring of the struggle. Toussaint said that someone ought to go to Rigaud and asked Vincent whether he would dare. But when Vincent said yes, Toussaint was embarrassed. He feared a trap. It was on this visit that, for the first time, Vincent noticed that his presence was distasteful to Toussaint. Yet Vincent did go to Rigaud. The ruler of the South, for so many years second in San Domingo history to Toussaint alone, was like a man distracted. During the interview, hatred for Toussaint overmastered his reason, and he seemed on the verge of committing suicide. How could France confirm the traitor Toussaint in his command? He would continue his resistance. But Rigaud no longer had the confidence of his followers. Vincent was not only Toussaint's envoy, he was the representative of France, and the population welcomed his coming. Why should they go on fighting? Why had they ever fought at all? Even during the truce, which Vincent arranged, the inhabitants of one town, Saint-Louis, admitted Dessalines and his officers and entertained them to dinner. Vincent at one time feared for his own life, so violent were the rage and despair of the cheated and deceived Rigaud. Rigaud planned to blow up Cavaillon, the official capital of the South, but the captain of the garrison refused to allow it. Realizing at last that all was over, the unfortunate Rigaud set sail for France, refusing to meet Toussaint. He was shipwrecked and reached Paris only on April 7, 1801. He sought an interview with Bonaparte, who listened in silence to his lengthy recital, then told him, "General, I blame you for only one thing, not to have been victorious." In the years of its history as an independent state, the mulattoes and blacks of San Domingo have fought the unceasing struggle of the classes, sometimes rising to civil war, as is common to all societies, whether homogeneous in color or not. But at the slightest threat of foreign invasion, they have always presented a solid front to the enemy. This lesson they were to learn by hard experience. Yet never was there so favorable an opportunity for a working arrangement as at the very beginning of their history under two such men as Toussaint and Rigaud, between whom there was such mutual admiration and understanding until Edouville's arrival in the island. Edouville's role does not concern us. The fatal error was Rigaud's. He could not see as far as Toussaint saw when he politely but firmly declined to play the fly to Maitland's spider. With victory, by August 1800, Toussaint had only half solved his problem. Hitherto, he had been distinguished for his humanity toward beaten opponents and his conciliatory policy toward enemies. Even the emigre whites, whom all Republican San Domingo hated and distrusted. But the garrisons in the South, the officials, were still mainly mulatto. To leave them as they were, after the bitterness of the Civil War, meant that if a French expedition landed, they would welcome it even more eagerly than when under Rigaud. 700 of Rigaud's finest soldiers left the South and went to Cuba, rather than serve under Toussaint. He asked Clairvaux, one of his mulatto commanders, to govern the South. It was a concession to mulatto sentiment, but Clairvaux refused. Thus, the task of pacification fell, unfortunately, to Dessalines. Toussaint did not confiscate property, not even the property of those who had followed Rigaud and abandoned the colony. 1/4 of the revenue from these plantations he gave to the laborers, 1/2 he turned over to the public treasury, and the other 1/4 was kept for the owners. Mulatto women had conspired against him, but even during the war he said that he did not make war on women, would not pay much attention to their cackle. If they were proved guilty, he would merely imprison them and see that no harm befell them. All through the privations of the war and immediately after, he treated them with special care. But he could not trust the army that Rigaud had made, which was as loyal to Rigaud as his own army was to him. Despite the amnesty, therefore, he commanded Dessalines to purge the troops. 300 prisoners in Léogan were shot, and 50 others in Port Republican, nearly all officers. Toussaint had to put a stop to it. "I said to prune the tree, not to uproot it." All things considered, he had been singularly humane. But the population of the South had made peace on Toussaint's word, which he had the reputation of never breaking. He had fought the British and the Spaniards and strictly observed all the rules of war. Many white emigres, traitors to their country, now enjoyed their plantations and lived happily and peacefully under his protection after 4 years' service in the British Army, while the South saw the brothers Rigaud driven away, and men who had shed their blood against these same whites for the Republic shot down in cold blood by Toussaint's soldiers. A great bitterness against Toussaint and Dessalines smoldered in the hearts of the mulattoes of the South. Toussaint knew what he had done and the danger, but he could not help it. At all costs, he had to have an army in the South on which he could depend when a French expedition landed. The South was now under control. The next danger spot to be safeguarded was Spanish San Domingo. Bonaparte had expressly forbidden Toussaint to annex that colony. Toussaint would then be master of the whole island, all its resources and all its forts. But this was exactly the reason why Toussaint was going to take it. He was not going to leave his flank exposed to the French expedition. Roum had hitherto supported Toussaint against Rigaud. Even when the commission of Vincent, Raymond, and Michel was on its way, Roum had written privately to them, expressing his admiration for and faith in Toussaint, his fear lest power might turn his head, but his confidence that Toussaint would not embark on the mad adventure of independence. Roum had had secret instructions to encourage Toussaint to make an attack on Jamaica. This would still further tie Toussaint's hands and cause a clear breach with Britain. Roum proposed the scheme to Toussaint, but Toussaint, though he did not oppose it, was not going to entangle himself with Britain to please France. Emissaries were sent to Jamaica to stimulate a revolt, though it is not certain whether they went from Roum or from Rigaud. The British, however, were so incensed that they seized armaments which Toussaint was transporting by sea for the siege of Jacmel. Immediately, Toussaint protested. The British paid him 1.5 million francs in compensation, and good relations were restored. Toussaint was determined not to quarrel with the British, and the British were determined not to quarrel with Toussaint. The scheme to embroil Toussaint with Jamaica had failed. It was over Spanish San Domingo that the clash came. The Spaniards still retained control. Roume, before he succeeded Edouville as commissioner, had been merely a sort of resident minister. In the last days of December, while still besieging Jacmel, Toussaint asked Roume for authority to annex the colony. The Spaniards, he said, were stealing Negroes from the French part of the island and selling them as slaves. This was true, but obviously only a pretext. Roume had done his best, but he could support Toussaint no longer, for Bonaparte's orders were rigid. Roume had to defend himself, and Toussaint having allowed British trade representatives in San Domingo, Roume published a proclamation calling on him to chase them from the colony and prove that the accusations of infidelity to France were untrue. Toussaint refused, and Roume demanded permission to return to France. Toussaint could have marched into Spanish San Domingo, but he had to the full that care of dictators to legalize their most arbitrary acts. He wanted Roome's authority. Suddenly, some thousands of blacks, set in motion by Toussaint's agents, chiefly Moïse, marched on Le Cap, threatening to pillage the town if Roume did not sign the decree which would save their brothers from slavery. Roume refused. For nearly a fortnight, Le Cap stood in fear of destruction. To get him out of the way, Moïse commanded Vincent to go to Môle Saint-Nicolas. The laborers, though adamant, were disciplined and maintained perfect order. At last, Toussaint came and demanded that Roume sign. "My choice is made," Roume replied. "France will avenge me." Toussaint threatened him. "If you do not sign the decree, it means the end of all the whites in the colony, and I shall enter Spanish territory with fire and sword." Roume signed, but he wrote secretly to the Spanish governor, encouraging him not to hand over the colony to Toussaint's agents. Toussaint arrested Roume and sent him to Dondon, where with his wife and two daughters he was kept under supervision. Then, with Roume's official authority, he and Moïse marched on Spanish San Domingo. The Spanish troops were routed, and on January 21, 1800, the Spanish governor formally handed over the colony. Toussaint used his usual conciliatory methods. He appointed Clairvaux, the mulatto, to be ruler of the province, and his brother Paul to be commander of the garrison at Santo Domingo. He addressed proclamations to the inhabitants, promising full amnesty, and these were scrupulously observed. He was now complete master of the whole island, a territory nearly as large as Ireland, and he had become so in less than 10 years. "I found the colony dismembered, ruined, overrun by the bandits of Jean-Francois, by the Spaniards, and by the English, who fought over the bits. It is today purged of its enemies, quiet, pacified, and advances toward its complete restoration." He had made the boast after the departure of Maitland. Now it was more than ever true. But there was still Bonaparte with his special laws. Before he left Santo Domingo, he wrote to Bonaparte asking for approval of what he had done. He accused Roume of intriguing against him and impeding his wish to take possession of the former Spanish colony. "Having decided to take possession by force of arms, I found myself obliged before setting out to invite Citizen Roume to desist from the performance of his duties and retire to Dondon until further orders. He awaits your commands. When you want him, I will send him to you." This was defiance. Toussaint attempted no defense. "Whatever may be the calumnies that my enemies have seen fit to write to you against me, I shall abstain from justifying myself. But although delicacy enforces silence upon me, my duty prescribes that I prevent Roume from doing harm." This was more than defiance. It bordered perilously on impertinence, and Bonaparte was the last man in the world to be trifled with. Toussaint had burnt his boats. With vision, courage, and determination, he was laying the foundations of an independent nation. But too confident in his own powers, he was making one dreadful mistake. Not with Bonaparte, nor with the French government. In nothing does his genius stand out so much as in refusing to trust the liberties of the blacks to the promises of French or British imperialism. His error was his neglect of his own people. They did not understand what he was doing or where he was going. He took no trouble to explain. It was dangerous to explain, but still more dangerous not to explain. His temperament, close and self-contained, was one that kept its own counsel. Thus, the masses thought he had taken Spanish San Domingo to stop the slave traffic, and not as a safeguard against the French. His silence confused them, and did not deceive Bonaparte. Dessalines, his fearless lieutenant, had no such scruples. After the war with Rigo, Dessalines told his soldiers, "The war you have just won is a little war, but you have two more bigger ones. One is against the Spaniards, who do not want to give up their land and who have insulted your brave commander-in-chief. The other is against France, who will try to make you slaves again as soon as she has finished with her enemies. We'll win those wars." That was, and still is, the way to speak to the masses. And it is no accident that Dessalines, and not Toussaint, finally led the island to independence. Toussaint, shut up within himself, immersed in diplomacy, went his torturous way, overconfident that he had only to speak and the masses would follow.